The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast of one of the host's favorite GMs is Duke Tobin. Because he's a dog's name. That's Lenny. That horrified laugh? Delighted laugh?
Yeah, I didn't know where you're going with it. That's all. I was like, favorite GM, this is going to be good.
The dream team is back. Dominic Foxworth, very low on the screen, but high in my estimation. It's so good to have you back on the show.
It's so good to be back. It was such a regular part of my life at one point. I miss you and I miss your crazy listeners.
Let me throw a quick shout out to your podcast, you guys. If you aren't subscribing, the Dominique Foxworth Show, excellent podcast. Right now they're covering a lot of NBA stuff as well. So if you're interested in more than football, it's a good hang. But we're not interested in more than football. We only talk football on this show, sometimes TV. This is actually my first real opportunity to kind of take stock of the draft. I was on NFL Live on Monday, but we didn't like get to really dig into everything. So I'm excited to do that with you. We're going to start off by picking a bunch of drafts that we loved. I wrote loved. I don't know. And then we're going to talk about drafts that left us asking questions, which is my way of copping out of picking losers. No, I actually, exactly. It's a mixture of, I think, good and bad.
I didn't pick losers. I gave you actual questions, and then I realized, questions. She just didn't want to say winners and losers.
I didn't pick losers either. I just picked drafts that left me. Well, I think one of yours could be criticized. The draft could be criticized, at least one. So, yeah, we're going to – they're good. And, like, spoiler, like, one of them is the Ravens, too, which we haven't got a chance to talk about the Lamar extension. And I think their draft's really interesting. And I really like that one. But we're going to start off with the positivity. So I went back because I believe in accountability. And I looked at this time last year when I did a podcast with the same conceit, drafts I loved – and it's kind of interesting to take stock of a year later. You want me to read you? I'll read you the drafts. You wasn't you and me. I can't remember who I did it with, but someone and I picked drafts that we loved. So the Seahawks, which
home run?
And I mean, I didn't know Tariq Woolen would be so awesome, but you know, I like Charles Cross and
you knew
Abe Lucas, Kenneth Walker, and the gang. Okay, the Jets. Obviously, you know, great draft.
I mean,
that was an easy one, though. That was so easy.
Whatever. You got it right.
They got a bunch of picks in the top.
Don't downplay when you're right. Play it up, because you and I both know that if we are wrong, we are going straight to wrong jail, and no one is ever going to let us out. So you were right. Good for you.
The wrong jail. Okay. So this one I think you could criticize, but I actually view it more as an incomplete. The Eagles, because Jordan Davis and Nakobe Dean didn't play much. So you could say, well, Jordan Davis played a bit, you know, and I think showed some stuff. But Nakobe Dean, you know, barely played. So question mark there. The Ravens, Tyler Linderbaum, Kyle Hamilton really came on at the end. Isaiah Likely, the tight end they took. Ooh, I thought flashed some. And then the Lions, which I feel really good about, especially I certainly didn't know this at the time, but they got so many contributions later in the draft from guys in the mid rounds, you know, like Malcolm Rodriguez and stuff. So, and then the Chiefs, who ended up having an incredibly impactful draft class. I mean, Super Bowl, they played more rookies than every team but the Bears and the Texans. So not bad, not bad.
It's really good. I mean, to be honest, the defining these great drafts, when you think about the great drafts in history, it's about the hits that happen late. And let's be fair, none of us really know who, like, particularly in the late round picks, who's going to turn out. Like, no one predicted that Richard Sherman was going to be a Hall of Fame cornerback. Like, those picks are hard to predict. So I'm not going to be spending a lot of time talking about them. And then next year, I'm going to pretend like I knew who they all were.
Yeah, I definitely knew that Tariq Woolen was going to be awesome. And no question about Malcolm Rodriguez. I was talking him up. Okay. So that is my preamble to actually naming some of the drafts. Let's go back and forth. I'll go first. I'll go with one of the drafts that I really loved. And I'm really excited about this one because I feel like, and maybe listeners, you can tell me fans of this team, if you agree. I feel like I don't talk about this team often, or at least I haven't over the last couple of years, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. Definitely didn't talk about them a ton last season. It was a transitional season with Kenny Pickett. Anyways, I'm going to talk about them right now because Steelers fans, I absolutely loved your draft. So just to recap, traded up for Broderick Jones in the first round, jumping the Jets, by the way. I don't know if you saw this, Dominique, but yeah. The Patriots did the deal with them knowing that the Jets were probably wanted an offensive tackle. And Bill Belichick actually took less than the Jimmy Johnson trade value to do that. I mean, you know... You know,
I mean, that's next level strategy. If you are, what he lost in the trade value, which I looked at the trade value chart a lot when I was talking about when I was preparing to talk about the Houston Texans, which we'll get to at some point.
Both sides,
yeah, I looked at a lot, and Jimmy Johnson, or it's not Jimmy Johnson, Belichick's not one to stray away from that. He tries to win these trades. But I think if you look at the value of not having a tackle in New York, I think he won that trade no matter what. That's a big win for him and everyone else in that division.
I wish I kept the handle, tweeted at me. There's like a website that aggregates all the different trade value charts so you can get kind of a sense of which is really useful. And it's not useful at all that I'm just saying it vaguely without giving the information. But anyways... Back to the Steelers. So they really needed a tackle. You know, they made some efforts to improve the interior of the offensive line. They haven't, it's just not a position that they've invested a ton at recently. And, you know, outside of offensive tackle, like their offense is pretty stacked, right? With the receiver core, obviously Najee Harris. So I thought this was really
good.
And Pickett, I thought Pickett was really solid at the end, and this will allow him to be even more solid. So second round, beginning of the second round, they took the hometown fave, Joey Porter Jr. Yeah. Again, needed a cornerback. They got a guy who I talked about him, you know, a little bit on my podcast with Deontay Lee. Not a perfect prospect, you know, a very physical, very long, aggressive cornerback. But I definitely think where they got him was great value. Also in the second round, Keanu Benton out of Wisconsin, who, you know, I think they don't need him right away, but defensive line depth, the interior is getting a little bit up in the years. My fave, Cam Hayward, can take him under his wing. And then third round, Darnell Washington, who I guess fell for medical reasons. So you're always, you never want to like say, wow, what a value, because there can be a bit of a question mark. But if he's healthy, tremendous for this offense, tremendous for the run game, the blocking, what it'll bring to the play action passing attack, allowing them to use more formational and personnel flexibility. And then Nick Herbig, who I talked about ahead of the combine, who's got pass rush upside. Corey Trice is a cornerback who I, hands up, haven't watched, but people like. So I guess
now
I feel
the real steal of the draft, Spencer Anderson. Go Terps. Anyway, go ahead.
I think what I want to say is, like, you know, and this is sort of just like a general thing about draft grades, like, you never know, right? Like, it often does come down to, like, do I like this guy? Have I heard of them? For me, though, it's kind of like, do I like these players who I've watched? Do they fit needs on the team? Do I feel like they got value for them based on where we heard they might be drafted, you know, projections, which is obviously always an uncertain thing. But I feel like with the Steelers draft, all three of those things aligned pretty well for them. So good job.
So,
Yinzes.
I mean,
sorry, never again.
Well done. I love the Steelers draft also. I think trading up to get the tackle is huge, and getting the guard from the Eagles in free agency to help the running tack makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah. The Joey Porter Jr., I don't care if he can play or not. I'm a sucker for a good story, and that's beautiful. The picture of him holding his son, and then he's now playing in a uniform. It just makes me so happy. But he's in a good spot, a place where they coach their DBs well, and the defense is not going to be a defense that's utterly reliant on cornerbacks shutting people down, because they got an older Patrick Peterson out there too. But they got that front that's going to be the strength of the defense, and they got two safeties that can play. So I'm not worried about that team. I think this team it's one of those sneaky teams. The way, like, I've been trying to think about, like, how to evaluate teams, and it kind of boils down to a couple big questions is, do you have a quarterback? Do you have the coaching staff? And do you have the roster? And I think they have the coaching staff and they have the roster. It's the quarterback the roster is strong. It's a surprisingly good roster, given that they were really bad a couple of years ago. Like, they turned it around really quickly coming out of the Ben Roethlisberger thing. So, yeah, the roster looks pretty strong. The coach is obviously, and the staff is obviously very good. And the quarterback showed enough to be encouraged. So I really like this team going forward. And, yeah, the decision that they made in the draft. I'm sorry, last thing. To your point about sometimes it's just about the names that we know, but the draft evaluation is about value and getting Darnell Washington in the third round, no matter the injury concerns. Like, it's all about risk. And to get someone in the third round who has high-end talent, like potential to get high-end, is like huge, because that's what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody in the third round that maybe it, because medical concerns, or maybe because it's a bad system, or maybe they need to mature, whatever, or they got poor coaching for whatever reason. You're looking for somebody because you're not drafting people in the third round and beyond like, oh, this guy's plug and play. You're looking for somebody that you can fit into your system or that you can bring something out of. If he can get to high level, then it's fine. So for Darnell Washington, the red flag, it's not about technique. It's not about coaching. It's about injury. So it's worth the pick right there, because he can be a dominant type player.
If he is healthy, the combination of him and Pat Freiermuth, very different. Mm. You know, I mean, it adds just a new dimension to this offense that I think, I think will the Steelers offense, because the wide receiver core is excellent, already presents a lot of problems for secondaries. And if you've got this, you know, blocking tight end in Darnell Washington, who I believe has pass catching upside, and brings such like a unique combination of size and athleticism that's, you know, missing from this group, it just makes it much more difficult to stop. And yeah, I mean, as far as the roster goes, like, went through all the rosters, the Steelers are one of the rosters that was better than I thought. When I went through the depth charts, you know, after free agency, and the thing that just kind of glaringly jumped out was tackle, because they were still rolling with the same tackles, and corner. So for them to, I mean, who knows if Broderick Jones and Joey Porter Jr. will be good at the beginning, but the fact that they were able to get solid players at that draft, especially where they drafted at the exact positions they need, is encouraging. So, all right, who do you have next?
Let's go with the Bills. I enjoyed their draft. I don't think anybody came into this draft thinking the Bills need a tight end. They got Dawson Knox, who's a good tight end, and they have, if anything, you thought that they might need a receiver if you're going to address the passing game. But I love Dalton Kincaid. And I love the two tight end set that they could offer. Kincaid is more of a pass catching threat. He's not like terrible at blocking, but he's more of a big body receiver. And I mean, any weapon that you can give to Josh Allen that gives that offense some flexibility intrigues me. The issue with that team, when you are critical of them, it's Josh Allen not wanting to take the small stuff, and also their inability to run. So Dalton Kincaid is someone who I think can manipulate zones, which is something that they're going to see a lot, particularly with his running ability, with Josh Allen's running ability, and with them, with defenses wanting to take away the deep passes. So Dalton Kincaid working underneath, two tight end sets help the running attack. They went and got Osiris Torrance, who's and I'm not going to pretend like I did a bunch of deep Osiris Torrance study at Florida, but people like him, and I hear he's a mauler in the run game, as they say. So addressing that also I thought was important. This is a team that is obviously perennially in Super Bowl contention. And these are the type of pieces, I think, particularly Kincaid, the type of piece that can unlock something in his offense that makes it a lot more dangerous.
Yeah, I love the Kincaid pick at 25 for them. You know, it's been now, I think, a couple years with the Bills offense where before with Dable and then, you know, most recently with Ken Dorsey after Dable moved on, we've been asking, okay, you know, if can they go heavier? You know, there was that playoff run. They put their fullback on the field a bit more. But I remember going into this last season, there was this thought, perhaps they will use the tight ends a bit more in response to the way defenses play them, which is to say, you know, light and hanging back. And it just never really materialized. And I think that it is largely probably because of personnel more than a desire to do so, you know, to be more multiple. In Dalton Kincaid, as you said, they got a tight end who at that point was, you could argue even earlier, the best pass catcher available to them. And I love
I'm
what
shocked
you,
that
you,
he went as far as he slid as far as he did. I'm sorry.
No, I just, I love your point about how he is the exact kind of player they need who will benefit from some of the spacing and the opportunities that this, that defenses afford them. You know, they do play a lot of zone. He has such a good feel for zone. And he has the ability to work underneath and get yards after the catch, but also to press the seams and threaten deep. He's a very credible deep threat. So I just think that it makes this Bills offense all the more scarier. And hopefully, you know, it's kind of, we're kind of talking about him like, okay, now they have some counter punches. The question is kind of whether or not they'll take them. You know, and they'll, the offense will evolve in the way that it needs to. But this gives them the combination of him and potentially better blocking up front is what they needed to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that we have to also appreciate the fact that later in the season, it gets colder and running the ball is more important. These things are in like a more physical style of game is needed. I think that having a two tight end set, and again, Dalton Kincaid is more a receiver than he's a blocker, but he's not a bad blocker. He'll be good to have on the field in those situations, and he'll create matchup problems where the defense might want to put an extra DB out there to challenge Kincaid or to guard Kincaid. Then you can run. Like, these are dilemmas that they aren't presenting for opponents right now. When you're playing the Bills, you're like, all right, we got to stop Josh Allen from running and stop him from throwing the ball over our head. Maybe double digs on third downs, and we're set. I think game planning against them gets a lot more complicated. Just with this one player, it opens up a lot of different options, particularly in snow games in January.
Yeah, I do worry a little bit about saying this tight end will make an impact immediately, because that often doesn't happen with rookie tight ends. But I do think he's a pretty unique talent. And also I don't remember what Travis Kelce was like as a rookie now.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if maybe it would be easier for a tight end, like a more of a move tight end, to make more of an impact rather than your traditional inline tight end. I don't know. Maybe just, I mean, he's basically a big receiver. So, you know, maybe perhaps,
I'm not sure why tight ends tend to have a tough time transitioning. Maybe it's because you are asking them to learn O-line stuff and receiver stuff. But if you are brought in for a specific purpose, like, he's not brought in so that they can get in behind him and run the ball, it might be easier for them to be like, all right. And he's a first round pick. So I think, despite the fact that it didn't happen for Pitts, I think they're going to bring him in and be like, all right, let's put some Kincaid plays in. Let's run these plays. And Pitts, his issues may also be with who's throwing him the ball.
They definitely are. Blocking's hard, man. I mean, you're a tight end. You're 250 pounds. I don't know how much tight ends weigh right now. But I mean, and, you know, you've been blocking dudes in the Big 10 and all of, or Big 12. And all of a sudden, it's like Myles Garrett's there, you're getting asked to chip out. Like, it, you know, it's just, it's tricky. Okay. Speaking of big dudes.
Also, they picked up Puna Ford. Yay, Bills. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a, I think, you know, certainly good to have defensive line depth there. Okay. The Indianapolis Colts. I want to start with a comment. Our colleague Stephen Holder, who covers the Colts, had a story about sort of the decision to draft Richardson and kind of what led to it. He said that Chris Ballard decided, who's GM of the Colts, decided weeks before that Richardson was their guy. And, you know, I think it says that they knew Bryce Young was going to go one, but they weren't sure what was going to happen after that. And he had a quote from Ballard. It was Ballard, an indirect quote, where he, I guess Ballard said, according to a source, all these quarterbacks are flawed, so let me take the dude who might be a grand slam. Dominique, I love that thinking. I love that thinking because the way, you know, if you're picking in the top four, go for it. I feel like you got to go for it at the quarterback position, especially in the AFC right now, where you've got all these, like, you know, freaking mutants like Allen and Herbert. And Mo, like, it's just, obviously, Mahomes. And if there's anyone who knows that average ain't good enough, it's Chris Ballard over the last few years. I do think, and Ed Stevens' story makes this clear, though, it wasn't just, you know, his view of wanting to grab the potential upside of Richardson, but the marriage with Shane Steichen that really drove this home. And this is why we all kept saying Richardson Colts, Richardson Colts, Richardson Colts, because it was the quarterback coach pairing that was the easiest to imagine. It literally is hitting copy paste on the Eagles offense. I'm not saying he's going to be Jalen Hurts. I'm not saying he can do all that stuff immediately, but it was just the most obviously correct marriage for them. And maybe it won't work out, but I don't know if Anthony Richardson gets drafted there 5 years ago, frankly. So I'm glad they went for it. No, he doesn't.
I know he doesn't. Yeah. I mean, I think that the Hurts, Allen, Lamar, like, these are all people who I think have helped NFL GMs and teams wrap their mind around something different. And I think the best example of it is probably Justin Fields. And I know that doesn't seem like the one you would point to necessarily, but when you're making the argument that you loved from Chris Ballard, part of the point is what you're saying is any of these quarterbacks can fail. Honestly, most of them will fail because that's the history of the league. But only one of these quarterbacks has the potential to be like up there with those top tier guys. Or I wouldn't say only one. There is one with more skills that would land him up there. So it's more likely. You feel more confident that it could happen. But then you also could say that you pick him because his ceiling is higher. But I also think you could argue that you pick him because his floor is higher also. And I know that that's hard to wrap your mind around because he hasn't played that much and he has accuracy issues and there's just a lot of questions around him. But that's what the running ability did for Jalen Hurts, is that kept the floor high enough for him to develop this other stuff. And that's why I said Justin Fields
is a great
example. That's
what's happening with Fields right now,
Yeah, because Justin Fields is on objectively a very bad roster as far as NFL is concerned, but their offense is mediocre. You know why they're mediocre? Not because Justin Fields is zipping passes into tight windows, bad receivers, because he is a super athlete at quarterback. And that's what you just drafted in Anthony Richardson. So he's going to lift the floor of your team, presumably, as soon as he gets in there with just his running ability. The dimension that adds to the offense will lift the floor of your offense to a respectable, mediocre point.
Yeah.
And if he can develop all that other stuff, then you're good. If not, then too bad.
And his running ability will make his life easier. First of all, it looks like he's going to start immediately, which increasingly I think is the correct thing, by the way, as he starts, because not just because it gives him a floor, but also because it means he'll face simpler defenses.
Yep.
He is a math changer. And if you're a math changer, you guys see a lot of cover three. it's what it is, you know.
We wrote about all this with Lamar, and no one believed us, but we were right.
We are in wrong prison about a lot of other things, so.
We are in wrong prison,
that's one that'll help him. And and it's just a great coach pairing. But also, so the whole draft is really, I saw somewhere the average relative athletic score, which is the score where they take all the combine numbers and mush them into one number out of 10, was 9.5 out of 10, which is insane for a draft. Richardson had a perfect 10, by the way. The second pick was a cornerback. This is actually a very funny pairing, 2 and 3. Cornerback out of TCU, Julius Brands, who's like 6'3", you know, long, strong. And then the third round pick was Josh Downs, who's the tiny receiver out of UNC. So I just like that together. They also, another faller, I don't know if there was any, I didn't see any medical rumors, but Adewale, out of Northwestern, who's the defensive lineman, fell to them. But I want to talk about Brenson Downs. Yeah, so, I mean, both cornerback and wide receiver areas that I think people kind of expected them to target in the draft. Brents is an interesting pick. They're both prospects who are, I think, flawed in some ways, but I actually think make a lot of sense in the context of the Colts in particular. Brents, you know, the speaking of cover three, by the way, makes a lot of sense. It's Gus Bradley. Yeah. They're going to play a lot of cover three. I like him as a cover three corner. And then on the flip side, I really like the Downs pick because in Michael Pittman Jr. and Alec Pierce, you have sort of the big possession guy, you've got the deep threat, but they were missing a shifty slot guy. And Josh Downs is frankly about as shifty as he gets in this draft. And he catches everything, which I think will be especially useful for Anthony Richardson because his accuracy underneath is a little hit or miss right now. So I just like the way these players fit onto their roster. I like the players. I like the fit. So, yeah, go Colts.
I would just throw in there with the down selection is I like him as a combination with Richardson, not just because of his pass catching ability, but as a playmaking threat, because gadgety type stuff, because the other receivers that they have, I don't see as those type of guys. So like jet sweeps, empty into the option, like any type of reverses, like those type of things that I think will be helpful for a team because most teams are going to be overcommitted to stopping the Richardson runs. So I think the things that you can create with Downs.
Sometimes you were talking, I get too excited because I want to jump in because I think you're triggering a thought, but I do want you to finish your thought, but I also want to jump in. The thing I want is I was just about to yell RPOs because again, think about Jalen Hurts and that Eagles offense. It's not really, I mean, I sort of like the Devontae Smith role sometimes in the slot, but they need guys who can get open quickly underneath. And I think I think we will see a lot of RPOs. The RPO game's going to be a nightmare to stop, man. Yeah. Him and Jonathan Taylor. Oh, my God.
So the RPO is particularly when you're playing against a running quarterback, the RPO is super helpful because teams can't play man against you. When you have a running quarterback or a quarterback with that type of athleticism, they can't play man against you, so they have to play zone. And RPOs are designed to make you wrong. Like you can't cover both the seam and the A gap. So
That Shane Steichen already knows all this shit.
Everyone should know this.
I know, but he's got this very recent proven record of doing all of the things we want to be done with Anthony Richardson. It's so great.
And he is a better prototype for this than Jalen Hurts, is now one of the best quarterbacks in football. So, I think Shane Steichen has to be super excited about this.
The thing, Hurts, and he improved his accuracy a lot, especially over the middle of the field. But even coming into the league, I would say, a little bit more polished than Richardson. Yeah. And the other thing with Hurts that you can't, we're talking about all this great option football stuff. He is very, he always makes the right reads. He runs that offense really. So, Richardson, there's going to be a bit of an adjustment there. Although obviously they ran a lot of RPOs in college as well. I'm just really excited to see it, man. I just can't, I was so happy when they called his name. Cause we talked about this when we did the Lamar story. But the way the story ends is, he could change the NFL if he lands with a team that lets him. Yep. And that wasn't always, for years with these quarterbacks, these athletic quarterbacks, that was always the question mark. Are you landing with a coach who actually knows how to maximize your abilities? If I'm Anthony Richardson, I'm over the freaking moon that I landed with Shane Steichen. So, all right, your team next.
Let's go with the Giants.
I like the Giants draft. Giants. I love this draft.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Surprise. I would have guessed that you liked the Giants draft other than the fact that you told me that it was one of yours and I tried to pick it anyway. Anyway, I take them first because they went and got Deontay Banks.
Yeah.
who was the best corner in the draft. Maybe not, but he's the best Terrapin corner in the draft. Did both the Terps corners get drafted? I think they both got drafted.
Did the
at least?
Ja'Corian Bennett, right? He got drafted. Yeah, he got. Yeah, I can't remember what team, but he did get drafted. I think in the mid rounds.
But yeah, so they had questions, and I think at corner is a big place where they need help. He's a super athlete. I think under Wink's system, he is the type of player that I think Wink is going to like. He's physical, outstanding as far as speed and size and all that stuff matters. He's good in man coverage. He's not, I wouldn't call him a shutdown corner just yet, but I think he has the potential to get there at some point. But he's a great player for what they need at this time to let Wink play more of the aggressive style defense that he wants to play because he has that same mentality. I also think that Jalin Hyatt, they should be incredibly overjoyed to get them where they got him. This offense needs, and see the problem with the Jalin Hyatt thing is they filled the role, or the biggest issue that the Giants had was with their playmakers, pass catchers, and all that stuff. And Daniel Jones being the centerpiece of their offense because he was running the ball and he didn't have anyone to throw it to. Jalin Hyatt is not a true number one, I don't think, which is something that they really need. But yeah, he is, in my view, a guy that you have to game plan for, which is the next best thing, and that he's an aggressive deep threat. And like, you are going to have to know where Jalin Hyatt is on the field. I don't think that you necessarily have to double him, but he's the first person that they got outside of Saquon. He's the first pass catcher that Daniel Jones is going to have in a long time that the other team is going to be like, all right, well, I don't know what his number is. Where's Hyatt? Let's find him and let's think about him. And for an offense, that means a lot because it'll help you. It'll make it easier for you to do pre-snap reads because you'll come up to the line understanding that the defense is going to adjust to him first. So I think it makes things better. He's still, and maybe he turns into a true number one, and maybe I'm 100% wrong, but I think he's an incredible deep threat, and that is more than they've had before, which you know how I feel about deep threats.
And they got him in the third round too, by the way, that's the value. I mean, yeah, my love of Jalin Hyatt is documented. I think it's reasonable to ask who's going to be in the slot. Who's going to be because Jalin Hyatt played primarily in the slot in Tennessee. Right. A lot of free releases, you know, and the Giants have like 400 slot receivers right now.
Yeah.
So that I think we'll see. Maybe I think with Jalin Hyatt, some of it is a projection. Maybe at the next level, he can show. Maybe he can be number one. Maybe he can win outside, etc. But like you said, the speed is just really what matters here. Especially like this is an offense that did not ask Daniel Jones to push the ball downfield very much, which is a big part of the reason why he would cut down on his turnovers. And the presence of Jalin Hyatt, who truly has like game changing defense has to account for him constantly. Oh my God! Speed. Is not even necessarily that Daniel Jones is going to target him, but it will create so much space for this offense. Yep. And Daboll and Mike Kafka showed that they're so good at creating catch and run opportunities underneath. So that space is going to be huge. So I love that pick. I love the Banks ones for all the reasons you mentioned. I think just Wink Martindale had to be over the moon. Now he gets to play opposite Adoree Jackson. It's a very aggressive, blitz-happy defense. We know that. And then in between them, they took John Michael Schmitz, who... You know, most people thought it was the best center in the draft, very experienced. So, which was a huge need. The interior of this offensive line was a big problem. So, I think just, you know, those first three picks in particular, really nice marriage of need, value, upside, fit, talent. Yeah. So,
I read that John Michael Schmidt had a first round grade. So, I'm gonna take the readings word for it because I refuse to break down center's tape. So he's awesome. They got him in the second round. So good job there. The Jalin Hyatt thing, I just want to touch on one more time. And this is something that you've heard me say plenty of times, particularly when you are a team that is focused on running the ball or is at least knows that your best asset is running the ball. The thing you need next is somebody to go over the top.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make defenses choose between, are we going to let Jalen Hyatt run 4-3 right at us, or are we going to try to load the box for Saquon? You've already, the issue with this team last year is they weren't creating any dilemmas. Like, nobody was stressed about the dilemmas that they were creating. They've created one right there without even designing a play. Just putting Jalen Hyatt on the field already has people like, all right, we got to make a choice here.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay, so the next one we don't have to spend a ton of time on, but the Arizona Cardinals is a winner for me. And I'm glad to hit this because tough time to be a Cardinals fan, man. It's going to be a tough year. Y'all know it's going to be a tough year. But I think this is a team that I've been very critical of for the last like 2 years, a lot of the decisions made by the front office and the coaching staff. So I want Cardinals fans, I want to give you a moment here. You should feel great. Finally, I would say for the first time in years, feels like the front office gets it and they're going in the right direction. Because this was a draft for the future. It was about just accumulating picks and players. And it all starts, of course, with the trade we talked about, which was trading down from 3 to 12. So the Cardinals received pick 12, pick 33, a first round pick that could be very valuable in next year's draft, which is a draft where picking at the top should be very lucrative because of the two quarterbacks minimum that we know of. And a third, you sent pick 3 and 105. When that came through, and then at first I was like, whoa. And then when it was revealed that the Texans first next year is their pick, not the Browns pick. Hey, maybe the Texans will finish a better record than the Browns. We'll talk about that side of things in general. But all told, awesome. And then you moved
found
up
yourself
to
get, a sucker. Yeah. Good job. Way to go, Arizona, because they were the sucker. Was it last year or the year before when the Ravens fleeced them, sent them Hollywood for two first-round picks?
Or just one first, I think. It was just
one first. It wasn't like a first and a
– But he had one year. He was a contract year.
You got – so congratulations on finding you a sucker, because this sets you up pretty well for next season. I don't think the Texans are going to be great. I think you're going to end up with another top five pick from the Texans and a top five pick from yourself. So maybe you'll do better with it. And maybe they might get the number one overall. And then see you, Kyler.
They'll have their choice of things. They can, maybe Kyler comes back and he's awesome, in which case that number one pick will be worth the mother load. Maybe they decide to move on. They have so many options now. Right. To really accelerate this rebuild. And I like the players they drafted, by the way. So they did trade up. They didn't give up a ton. I think they gave up with Detroit picks 34 and 168, and they got 81 back. But then they to go up from 12 to 6 and get Paris Johnson Jr., who was ended up being the first offensive tackle taken in this class, which a lot of people thought might happen. They took B.J. Ajulari, who's an edge rusher out of LSU, who I thought flashed some upside. Michael Wilson, Stanford wide receiver. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't watch him a lot, but I know people like him. But the point is this: they got a lot of players, they got a lot of picks. Well done, Arizona. We're gonna talk about the Houston side of it in a second, but I just want to.
The story of their draft is that trade. That's all. Yeah. I mean, that's, and then they got back up and got Paris Johnson, who could be like a cornerstone left tackle maybe.
Future, yeah.
That's fine. But the story of this was, to me, was they got a first round pick for next year.
And they got 33.
Yeah, and they got 33. That's right. Which, I mean, for a spot that, in a player that does not project. I mean, any player who's not a quarterback, it's hard to argue that it's worth trading all that they traded to get them. But he's also a very good player. But I guess we'll get to Houston. But
we'll get to Houston.
No one's projecting him as like a...
We'll get to the Houston side of it, because I was fighting with people on the internet about it. So I'm glad to talk to you about it. Okay. Yay, Arizona. Good job. Sorry about the season. All right. Last winner.
Oh, sorry about the Suns, too.
It's not over. Last winner is you. But you chose an interesting one.
Tough. Oh, it's my turn. I thought we were about to talk about the Suns.
Football.
I guess the Chargers.
Oh, the conviction.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, like, it's kind of like I wanted, there are teams that I wanted to talk about, and the Chargers are one of the teams I wanted to talk about. They are one of the few teams who came into this draft with a clear mandate from everyone in sports media and everyone of their fans, like, stop doing Justin Herbert like this. You went and got Kellen Moore, who's an outstanding offensive coordinator, even though he lost his job. They have been... He was with Dallas, and they did some really impressive things in the passing game. One of the best offenses in football while he was there. Now he is helping out Herbert. And the mandate was get some people who can run so that Justin Herbert can throw the ball way down the field with that big old monster arm that he has. And they got Quentin Johnston, who is a big play guy from TCU. Again, this falls into the category of, I don't think he's a true number one, but he's a big play monster and he can run fast, surprisingly agile for his size. He's a weapon. And I like to see that for them. And then later in the draft, they got Darius Davis, who's a smaller, he's a lot like he's like the UNC guy, but even faster than him, but he's like a gadget, super athletic, tiny, like punt return, like you imagine type of player who I think is awesome for that offense. So I like those additions. They went edge
Tui.
Between those two picks with Tui. Yeah.
Yeah. I like him. I like the defensive players they took. Tupulotu at USC. Yep. And then Diane Henley, the Washington State linebacker. Both depth probably to start, but with upside, I think Tui kind of inside.
Yeah,
I think outside.
Tui is upside. He's inside outside as far as a pass rusher, but I think also it's like some injury insurance
depth.
Yeah, for an older Khalil Mack and always injured Bosa.
And with Henley, I mean, they signed Kendricks this offseason, but he's another one where like I didn't really talk about him when we talked about the linebackers. Very solid tackler, very strong, needs help and coverage. So, you know, depth, figure it out. But, you know, the wide receivers are kind of the point of interest here because it was just such a – everybody kind of assumed it was something they would address in the draft. It was interesting, though, because people thought, based on the mocks, that they were going to take one of the speed guys, Zay Flowers, who was still on the board and then ended up going a pick later to Baltimore. Or Addison, right? Who's more of a separator. And they took Quentin Johnston, who's like pretty similar to Mike Williams. The big difference, and I do think this is important, is the speed, especially with the ball in his hands. That's where he's very different from. Like, they look similar, but they're not quite the same player. You know, I had my doubts about Johnston. I've talked about this. The hands do concern me. But I think the element he brings after the catch is something new for this offense. The speed and the physicality, and it adds a different dimension to this receiving group. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he ends up producing at a high level, even though they have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen on the roster.
I mean, it's fair criticism. He's not the first receiver I would have taken either, but he's really fast, and you're right. The hands have always been a concern, but it's about, like, threatening the defense. And I think paired with Justin Herbert, he's going to be good. So
that's a get off the bus team. Herbert, Johnston, and Mike Williams. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, we'll see how it works out. It's definitely not a draft that you want to say that these guys killed it in the draft, but they went in with with a decided purpose, and they addressed it with two players that I think will help this offense.
Red zone, just jump balls all the time, jump balls.
Yeah, that's your favorite. You love a red zone fade.
Mike Williams is like they do throw it to him, but that's. That's a lot of size in the red zone. All right. Take a quick break. Come back and get to some of these big questions we've got.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
Let's do the flip side of the Cardinals-Texans trade here. And look, Texas fans, you should be happy right now. You got... I was worried you weren't going to take a quarterback. On this very podcast, I bought all the Texans aren't taking a quarterback smoke. I inhaled it. I panicked about it. I was freaking out. I was like, what are you doing? You know, you can't have another year of Davis Mills. You took the quarterback. You took CJ Stroud. I love that pick for you. I think him, Bobby Slowick, great stuff. You did the trade we talked about. You got Will Anderson. You're going to be fun to watch next year. But my question is this. How good do the Texans think they are? Because if they're not good, oh my God, that draft pick next year is... And I've seen... I've heard, literally, Schefter brought it up. He was saying this is how the Texans felt on NFL Live yesterday. The justification, well, if you consider you got a quarterback, then, you know... it's not a lot to give up for a quarterback and the best edge rusher in the class. Like, it's a package deal. That's not how time works. Once you got Stroud at 2, the landscape of possibilities changed. Right. It's not, you know, you can't justify it. And the possibility that you're choosing is not quarterback plus edge rusher. It's edge rusher, Will Anderson, who we all love, versus 12. 33 and that future first. So the reality is Will Anderson has to be better for you to win this than the sum of those picks. Because people say, you get a pick like that so you can get a Will Anderson. That's not true. It's three picks It's multiple picks. It's not a one for one. Okay, anyways.
I've yet to hear a coherent argument on the other side of that, because the package deal doesn't work, because like if we had two picks in the draft and then there was a week between that and the third pick, the analysis should be the same as if there was a minute between those.
Yes. Picks. Oh, thank you. Oh, this is why I'm so glad we're doing this podcast. I needed you.
So as long as once that happened, then, as you mentioned, the landscape changed. So don't try to wrap it up into a package deal, because it wasn't a package deal. If that were the case, then we could make arguments across 5 years of drafts to say, oh, that's all right. Just wrap it all up. It's one big package. It worked out. That was a good deal. They won the Super Bowl 5 years later. No, it's a terrible deal. It's no way that you can get this value unless Will Anderson turns out to be Lawrence Taylor. And you're going to have to wait until the end of his career to get my apology. Because even if Will Anderson is the best defensive player in the draft, you still have not made that value. Unless he's so good that you guys are in the Super Bowl. And then the value of your pick is different. But it still doesn't account for the fact that you gave up the 33 also.
That's the other thing, too.
I added it all up at first with the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart, and I could not bend it in a way that made sense. I don't know.
It would be one thing, too, if they were a good team with, like, very few holes in their roster. Whatever you think of the Niners trade, yeah. Whatever. Like if you,
but I mean, I could get behind an argument about that. Is like, this is the piece we need.
We just need this edge.
Yeah.
Yo, you guys need so much more than that. Gosh.
You know what this is? This is the moral hazard draft. Like Nick Caserio is like, oh man, I'm gonna throw everything at the wall. This is the moral hazard draft, is what it is.
The trade value works out if you bake into the fact that Nick Caserio probably would lose his job after this year. If they're not. That's a little bit of it. He's like, here's my chart, and it shows a line. I had the worst analogy on NFL Live. It was so tortured. You want to hear it?
I would love to.
I was trying to explain it to Dan, because he was like, well, you know, if you take a quarterback, you consider that they would have traded for a quarterback in the belt. And I was like, Dan, it's like you buy a car for $5,000 and then you spend $15,000 in tires and you say $20,000 is an okay price for a car. That's how you're trying to justify it right now. And you could have invested that $15,000, and it's a guarantee that $15,000 could have been doubled if you invested it. And all you got was tires.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, Will Anderson. You're better than tires.
He is. I know. I'm not trying to compare him to tires. He's a good player. Okay.
And then on top of it, like, I guess we don't know how strong next year's draft is, but we do know that this year is thought of as not a very strong draft. So if you factor that into the value of the pick, it gets even worse.
So the only way this works out is if you're good, which was why my question was, how good are the Texans think they are? So I actually went back. I looked at the roster. They're not. I don't think they're as bad as they were last year. I think they got better coaching. But, you know, like the receivers are Robert Woods, Nico Collins, John Metchie's back. They drafted Tank Dell, who I really like, is the little fast guy.
The offense is more concerning than the defense to me.
They signed Dalton Schultz. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
I don't think they're going to be good.
The defense, I think, has the potential to take a leap, especially with Ryan's. They brought in some veterans. Secondary, you know, should be better.
Stingley, come around, I hope. And yeah, but it doesn't. I mean, it's frustrating and disappointing, and I don't know how you do this and you sleep at night. But I guess if we're just grading this draft, they got two of the top five players in the draft. Good for them.
I kept seeing on TV the Texans won the draft, and I was like, what are we? I mean, they won the instant gratification draft.
They did.
It's a nice car.
No patience. It's so sad. It's disappointing, but I don't know.
It's funny that they went
on my show. Sometimes I'll like take a bad take and like challenge myself to find support for it. So I thought I was going to do that here. I can't.
There's the no only way it works it. Is if they're good. And it, even then, it's still a F ton of draft capital to give it up. But you feel you don't feel as like, about it if it's like, I don't know, pick 17.
He got to be generational. Like, he has to have quarterback level impact. Not even the quarterback. The edge rusher has to have quarterback level value because your pick is going to be a quarterback level pick next year.
Let's do the Ravens question. I want to be positive. Do your Ravens question. So, Dominique, what's your question coming out of the draft?
How excited are you for the Ravens offense?
what a, I don't want to say it was a womp womp, but Lamar doing his deal was so anticlimactic. Like, it broke. We were on NFL Live. It was like 30 minutes before the end of the show. And the deal came in, and I was like, well, that's normal. It's just such a normal contract, which, by the way, if you really step back, I know there was like so much drama and the non-exclusive and all of that, but like so many questions about Lamar and how did not having an agent hurt him. In the end, he went out, he got the information that no other team was going to give him the contract. He got another piece of data, which is Jalen Hurts doing a normal contract, and said, all right, I'll take a normal contract. Pretty freaking logical the way things turned out. And it was like an extremely, it's like, okay, next contract up, you know, it's just like little bit richer.
There's really nothing to criticize about the deal. Like, he did not revolutionize the NFL. Okay. That's unfortunate. But he, in this process, he made his position clear enough that the Ravens knew that they were going to have to make him the highest paid quarterback. He waited till somebody else got paid. It then got even more money. So like, I understand that I might be a little bit biased in favor of Lamar in defense of some of the anti-Lamar people, but it's really hard to argue against what him and whoever is helping him did right here. Like, he got the best deal in the history of professional football. So good job.
And it'll be surpassed by the next deal. And that's just how this works. Do think, by the way, that
and he got to stay with the Ravens.
Yes, which is more appealing than it's been a long time, to answer your question. So the Ravens, in the meantime, they add Odell Beckham Jr. I've talked about this, you know, crazy contract, but whatever. That's not Lamar's problem. They have a new offensive coordinator, Todd Monken, who I think is better than Greg Roman. And in the very first round of this draft, they took Zay Flowers, the aforementioned speedster. Is that Lamar meowing?
Yep.
He loves the draft.
He loves the draft. Yeah.
So it's Dominique's cat, Lamar.
My son named the cat Lamar. I'm not that much of a fan, but I'm not going to pretend like he didn't name him after Lamar Jackson, because he definitely named him after Lamar Jackson. But yeah, I love this. The personnel on this offense. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'll say, just to kind of actually talk about the Lamar.
Yeah, just keep it going.
Talk about the offense. When they hired Monken, so Monken was the offensive coordinator at Georgia. And my first reaction was, you know, oh, this Georgia offense, tons of tight ends, aforementioned Darnell Washington, you know, very play action heavy, some QB run. Yeah, I see, you know, I think he's going to bring a better attention to detail with the passing game, and it should be a little bit more advanced than what we've seen. But, you know, to be fair, Greg Roman did not have the best personnel to work with through most of his time in Baltimore. So then they go out. They add Odell Beckham Jr. and then they draft Dede Flowers. And suddenly, like, I'm looking at this depth chart, and the first thing that jumps out is they need three wide receivers on the field. Like, for the first time in a very long time, the best Ravens personnel grouping, if Rashad Bateman and Odell Beckham Jr. are healthy, is one that is spread out with wide receivers. This is an offense that's been so condensed by design, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there's just so much potential for this thing now with the talent they have. I think back to 2019 when Lamar Jackson was the best empty quarterback in football. If you have a quarterback who's a threat to run the way he is out of empty, and you have this group of wide receivers, you create so many problems spatially for defenses. I cannot wait to see what it looks like.
So Todd Monken said all the right things. I want to create space on the field. One of his quotes, explosive plays and tempo. These are all things that he's saying. And just in case we didn't run down all the personnel, I know you touched on a lot of it. So Zay Flowers, they just added explosive big play type of receiver. Mark Andrews, one of the best tight ends in the league. Isaiah Likely, who was a tight end they brought in last year, who is a heck of an athlete, big, tall guy who makes pretty impressive plays in the course of the game. Don't forget about J.K. and Gus in the backfield. Odell Beckham and a healthy Bateman. So to your point, spread them the bleep out. Because the way that people have been attacking Lamar with success is aggressing, blitzing. Go ahead and blitz and let him throw a quick screen to Zay Flowers. Or just get or miss a tackle. Like, these are things that it seems simple, but they haven't been doing it in the past, in part because they're running an antiquated, congested offense that does not stretch the field in any way. So I'm very excited for the way this offense is going to look. The problem with this is it feels like they got a lot of mouths to feed. Odell's obviously going to want to make plays. Bateman is their true number one, and Flowers is a rookie coming in. Andrews is a former All-Pro. Like, these are things. Lamar just jumped up here. Speaking of Lamar, when's the last time Lenny barked on the show? I feel like Lamar's coming for his turf as the show animal.
He heard our excitement.
It's going to be fun.
Hey, God, what a turn for Ravens fans. Literally in the space of like 24 hours, you know, you go from being like, oh my God, this is going to be Tyler Huntley, you know, throwing the, we're going to get Lamar cameo. Hi, Lamar. Yeah.
He kept jumping on my table. Look in the camera right there.
Oh, what a pretty cat. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm not, no guarantees any of this work. No guarantees those guys are healthy. We'll see what Lamar looks like. Obviously, he was banged up last year. But I feel more excited about watching this Ravens offense than I've been in a minute. I mean, all right.
Ronnie Stanley can stay healthy and still be great.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
Offensive right, line. Okay. Question I have. What did the Lions board look like? I just want to see it. Because
it's just backwards.
Yeah. It, you know, just to recap, they had one of the wackiest draft, the wackiest draft. Jahmyr Gibbs, running back, first round, true first, like, jaw dropping moment of the draft for me. We know that they wanted Devin Witherspoon. Apparently they were surprised. Seahawks took Devin Witherspoon, the cornerback. And they traded down, and we can talk about the players. I just want to recap. And then with pick 18, maybe even more shockingly, they take Jack Campbell, linebacker out of Iowa. Shocking. Truly shocking. I didn't think he would go in the first round, much less at 18. Then in top of the second round, pick 34, they take Sam Laporta out of Iowa.
Which was confusing. Yeah. That was the first pick that they took that made sense, but that still was a confusing pick because
Overmayer,
the Notre Dame guy, was widely believed to be better than Laporte.
I do like Laporta, but yeah, I was surprised. Then they trade up into the second round and take Brian Branch, and this is where I start to look like the kombucha girl meme. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Somebody with some sense grabbed the steering wheel around there.
And then in the third round, they draft Hendon Hooker, which, let me say, totally okay place to take Hendon Hooker. You know, I talked about him. I didn't think he was a first-round draft pick, but the Lions, third round, I'm totally fine with it. So we can stop right there. Basically, you could swirl all the picks, and they actually kind of make more sense. And I thought Brian Branch could go in the first. He thought he could go in the first round. He was there. By the way, I interviewed him. I did this marketing thing for TCL on draft night, and I interviewed a bunch of prospects about their guilty pleasure TV shows. And his answer was Gossip Girl, and he identifies with Blair more than Serena, which made me really fall in love with him.
I have no idea what any of that means. But good for him.
Yeah, no, but I think. Okay, let's just pause there before we actually talk about the players and their fits. It just completely flew the order in which they player took the players they took. You can make cases for every single one of these players being impactful on the team. And I think that's why I'm not here to just poop on this draft. But this is one where, you know, we talked earlier about when you evaluate drafts, you consider the quality of the player, the fit, the value. The value was just bonkers in this draft.
Yeah, I can't explain it. I mean, I'm with you about understanding the argument, but we can't do what we did to the Texans.
I know! We can't say, if you take Brian Branch in the first round. Then...
Yeah, and not call out the Lions. You blew it, Lions. You might be okay. Jahmyr Gibbs might be awesome, but he's a running back. He's a great dynamic running back, but he's a running back at 12 who would have been there at 18 and probably would have been there at 34. May have been there at 45, probably not 45, but may have been there at 45 when you could have gotten him. There's just so much more, or so many other players that are more impactful and more valuable that you could have gotten in those early spots. And this is an argument for trading back, but I guess it's probably just because you want to trade back, it's not always easy to trade back. So I don't know. I understand drafting for need, but I don't even think running back was like a high need for them.
Well, they traded Swift, so ended up. No, by the way, the running back pass catching thing, I wanted to mention this. I saw this great Arjun Menon posted this. It was EPA per play for wide receivers versus running backs lined up outside in the slot. I will not read you the numbers. The numbers are not good for running backs. Typically, you are simply better off throwing to a wide receiver.
Right.
The Christian McCaffrey and San Francisco's of the world, it's not the norm. That's right. And look, Gibbs is a... Because I've seen the justification. Well, he's basically a wide receiver. He is a really, really special receiving talent. But again, it's like you're not likely to get as much value out of him. Having a running back, you can, you know, it's good sometimes because of what you can do to defenses by keeping certain players on the field and moving them around and such, but
I mean you could argue that it does create mismatches for other people, but also just get a good receiver.
We're talking about pick 13, man, or pick 12. I think my big takeaway, other than the wild value, by the way, Barnwell texted me. I think it was Barnwell. Brad Holmes is complaining about mock drafts on TV right now. So they've heard people criticizing them. My takeaway, though, is that they did take players who they felt had a pathway to play. Gibbs will play. Jack Campbell, pretty solid against the run. I think that they felt that was an issue for them with the linebacker position. Alfa Rodriguez, Sam Laporta, they needed a tight end. And then Brian Branch is the one where they're actually pretty stacked at safety, but it's a defense. Yeah. First of all, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is on a 1-year deal, so there's that. But it's a defense that didn't play a lot of like dime last year. And I think Aaron Glenn now has like a lot of movable chess pieces. This was the appeal of Brian Branch, why I liked him so much, is that he is an extremely versatile defensive back. He can play in the slot, he can play safety, he can play in the box. So I really love that pick.
The argument against us second guessing them is we got to build a football team. And if this football team, we don't have to win the draft. We don't got to get the most value for our spot. We got to build a football team. We have saw two players that we needed for our football team, and we got them and brought them in. This is a decision that like, I understand. This is where it talks about where I think talking about where you are in your championship window matters. They obviously think, based on these picks, that they're a player away. I mean, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, though. It feels like this is the player away draft versus the like, let's trade, take some risks and grab some upside.
Right. I think that we think that they are a little bit, that they're still in a position where they should go ahead and I guess it only comes down to the quarterback, honestly, because everything else on that team, I think, is competitive. But I don't know. I think that they make the choice they're right. They have to build a football team. And these are players that they need for their football team. They're just not players I would have taken.
Yeah, but I think there are other players we thought who could have filled some of these roles. And I'm trying to
concoct an argument so that we're not hypocrites the way that we talked about the Texans and the way that we're talking about the Lions for doing a similar thing.
Well, we're not justifying it. Because the thing is, once you were at pick 18, I can say, or pick 12, I can say, well, if they took Brian Branch at pick 12, would people be upset about that, you know, whatever. But there were also, like, you know, other really good players available at 12. There was many alternate paths that they could have gone down. But yeah, I this does feel like, let's fill out this team and win, and they will win, probably, you know? So I think they're going to be good. And it was just a very shocking draft. I hope it comes across that I don't think the logic is totally insane, and I still think this is gonna be a really good team. It's just not what I would have done. Okay, what's your question? Next question.
All right. let me pick. I'm really excited about, I guess we went from Gibbs, we'll go from Gibbs to Bijan, rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Okay, then that was too easy. Falcons, a 500 team or better?
That was another thing, right? If you're the Lions, I can't, like, you trade down. You're passing on Bijan at six. Not that.
Yeah.
I mean, they got another pick.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah, if you guys were in the market, if you were fine with drafting a first round running back. What you doing trading?
they did get the extra pick. Yeah. But okay, so back to the Falcons. I desperately want to fight the cliche of myself and say that I like this. I just don't. I don't. I'm sorry, and it's going to be awesome. But Jalen Carter was right there, y'all. Like, your defense is still not good. Yeah. Some people think that.
I mean, so I'm with you. I agree. I don't like this as a pick. This is another team that when I looked at their roster, I was like, oh, it's better than I thought. When I talk about, like, the big picture Super Bowl championship analysis, it's like quarterback, coach, and roster. We don't know about the coach. They don't have the quarterback, and the roster is closer than I thought. So, like, yeah. I think most people think highly of the coach, but he's unproven. But when you look at this, the talent, this is another offense that could get really excited about, aside from Desmond Ridder, and maybe he improves, but they got big physical receivers, and Drake London is a talented young receiver. They got Kyle Pitts, who is an explosive athlete at tight end. And they have Algiers, who's a running back who had success last year, over 1,000 yards. I mean, he was good. He was over 1,000 yards.
No. Oh. I'm thinking about him sadly because who knows how many touches he's going
to
get.
This is the point that I'm getting around to is, like, Algiers is a good running back, more traditional style of running back. And, like, even yards after contact, he was in the top third of the league.
Pick.
Yeah, I know, but he's going to be a part of this. They got Cordarrelle Patterson. I guess my point is Bijan is a really great player that is really dynamic. And I think that having all these different options, like, there could be situations where both Algier and Bijan are on the field at the same time with Patterson in and out of the backfield and Pitts at receiver or in line tight end and London being big, pushing people over. Like, it just feels like there's a lot of things that you can do with this team, but that pick probably would have been better spent elsewhere. But still, it's gonna be fun. And the defense, like, they went and got Okuda, who I loved coming out, but never really panned out. AJ Terrell is a good corner, and Bates, they got Grady Jarrett in there, Calais Campbell. So
the little corner they got out of Utah, Clark Phillips, he's good too, probably slot only, but I wouldn't be surprised if he sees the field. I think the offense, assuming Ridder can take another step, and, you know, he's playing solid at the end of the year, I think that they have total potential to be a top 10 offense. It's there. They obviously have a very strong identity. I think Arthur Smith, like, the thing, you know what it feels like, the Bijan pick? It feels like a pick to win the division. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to get you closer to a Super Bowl, is how I feel. And I think that's I always wrestle with this when I talk about teams. Like, you know what? Winning the division is awesome. Like, it's fun to be good and competitive. But, like, the reason we're it's the opportunity cost of something you could have done to get a higher value player, especially, like, on defense, frankly. But, you know, it's like when you look at the roster as a whole, does it feel like they're getting closer to really competing with the big dogs in the NFL? No. But so there's a little bit of short-termism. Like, in 3 years, when this roster, you know, let's say things continue moving in the right direction, in 3 years, 4 years, will you feel good about this pick?
It feels like a quick fix, kind of, like it's like candy. It's not going to stick with you. Like, it feels like adding Bijan might take you from a 3 to a 5, but by the time you're ready to go to 8, whoever would have you drafted in that spot would have been ready to perform, and maybe Bijan won't be at that point.
I think it was Jerry Jones was talking about how he regrets the Zeke pick. And the thing to remember is, like, Zeke was awesome when he came into the NFL. No, but but it's telling, right? Because it's a pick with these back, like, it's not like Zeke was a bust. I think that's what's important to emphasize. He was great at first. The problem is inherent to the position, and it's, you know.
And I mean, the Zeke pick was, the re-signing him was probably a mistake. The pick, I guess you could argue, was a mistake too. But if had they won the Super Bowl one of those years that they were definitely in Super Bowl contention, then I think he'd be feeling differently about this. Like, and you may never find Dak Prescott if Zeke isn't there.
Yeah, because that's true.
Dak, like, coasted on an offense that was supported by Zeke.
Spin zone. If Desmond Ridder looks awesome with the help of Bijan, maybe
there we go.
You know, maybe the running back is like the helper, you know?
There we go. I like it.
To find your quarterback. I love Bijan.
I like the spin zone. Yeah,
dude, can I say, again, referring to my red carpet experience, that dude, so I interviewed Bijan, has to be like the most charismatic NFL player in their 20s I've ever met. He is so he just as soon as I met him, I was like, oh, you are going top 10, because he just exudes star power. And I guarantee you, like, I actually talked to someone on a staff that ended up that had met him, but their team didn't take him, and they were like, yo, that guy, just like, it's so hard to walk away from him and not want him on your team, because he just, like, lights up the room. You know, so
a little bit,
yeah. Okay, my next question is a little, I would say it's neither negative or positive. It is a genuine question. When is Will Levis play? So Will Levis falls. It's interesting because I'm seeing a lot of, like, oh, the draft apparatus, you know, made people think Will Levis is going in the first round, and it hurt Will Levis. It's unfair. The Colts said they would have taken him 4 if Anthony Richardson was gone. Jim Irsay said that, so it's not like it was a big fall. Obviously, but anyways, he did fall to top of the second round. The Tennessee Titans took him, which is funny because I think a lot of people thought the Titans might take you in the first round. They drafted Peter Skoronski, who will help Will Levis. It's also funny because Will Levis is like basically like Ryan Tannehill 2.0 in a lot of ways.
I don't know. I guess so. Like, Tannehill, they want to move Tannehill, right? That's kind of what has been like. It'll be 18.
Rumored.
18 against the cap, dead money if they cut him. But I guess they would try to trade him. He's coming off an ankle injury. I mean, I don't see Will Levis playing this year unless something happens to Ryan Tannehill. It seems like, I mean, we haven't seen much out of Malik Willis. What we saw wasn't good, but what we saw the team out on him. Exactly. I was about to say, what we saw the team do in the middle of last season when they flew a man in the day before the game to play quarterback. They have no desire to give Malik a shot, or he hasn't shown that he deserves it. So it seems like it comes down to whether Tannehill is healthy, is there, or their season just blows up at some point and they want to see what they have. So I'd lean towards us seeing Levis before the season is over. But he's not going to start the year at quarterback. My assumption is going to be Tannehill. If somebody wanted Tannehill, they would have moved for him before the draft, unless there's some sort of injury or something that happens and Tannehill gets traded. But there's no way that Will Levis starts over Ryan Tannehill this upcoming season.
And I think it's good that he doesn't, because, yeah. Yo, have you looked at the Titans roster lately? I really love the Peter Skoronski pick for them, by the way. I thought that
he's a guard, right? That's what...
This was the question for the draft. Is he a guard or a tackle? We'll see, you know. He's a good offensive lineman. They really need offensive line help. They did sign Andre Dillard this offseason, so I think Skoronski will probably start at guard. But the rest of that line, even Dillard himself, questions. Receiving group remains Treylon Burks, Westbrook Akine, Kyle Phillips. They took a Tyjae Spears in the third round instead of taking a wide receiver. That one kind of shocked me. But I do like their tight end, Chig Okonkwo.
He went to Tulane. Is he from Louisiana? Because his last name is Spears.
I don't think they're related, but he's a good player. I do like him.
Oh, Marcus or Tyjae?
Both.
Okay, good. I mean, they got Jalen Duncan, Maryland tackle, who's obviously incredible. So whoever.
Never heard of him. Anyways.
Incredible.
It's not a good spot. It's actually the worst spot of the like other guy. Like the thing about the quarterbacks tanking at the top is like, I mean, I know we were just kind of questioning how many games the Texans would win, but at least it's a decent offensive line. Panthers have a good line. Okay weapons. And then Anthony Richardson, you know, we talked about that a little bit. I think he'll help his office out, but I don't think any of them are walking into nightmare situations. I think Levis will benefit from sitting.
This doesn't count as one of my real questions. Has anybody gone into a better situation as the number one overall pick
than Bryce?
Than Bryce. I mean, I guess, Mayfield went into the Browns, but
I can't remember the exact makeup of the Browns.
Yeah, I just remember they got loaded after they got him.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's just I guess the answer to the question doesn't matter. The point
is, it's a good situation.
Bryce is going into a really good situation.
Yeah, no, it really
for a number one overall. It's normally a putrid franchise, but they traded up.
The Titans are not a good situation. So, and I also think Will Levis is a quarterback who, I sound like a little bit like a hypocrite because I was like, Richardson should play immediately. But I think there are things about aspects to his claim that he can clean up and work on in terms of decision making and processing. So we'll see when he plays. Like you said, it'll probably be just when Tannehill gets hurt this season. I liked the pick for them, by the way. You know, in the second round, I thought, people were expecting them to take it later. The fact that they were able to get Skoronski first, you know, I don't need it for Tennessee.
You are running out of energy, and I got a great question that I don't know if you're ready for yet.
This is the last question, so better be good.
Are the Seahawks ready to win the NFC after this draft?
I don't think so, but they're going to compete for it. I think this offense is going to cook.
Yeah.
I mean, where would you rank the receiving trio of Metcalf, Lockett, and Smith and Jigba?
I mean, they're behind
Higgins, Tennessee,
Chase,
Cincinnati,
and Boyd. Yeah. And that about it as far as three receivers concerned, because I think of some other pretty good duos, but three, assuming Jackson is as good, he's the best receiver in the draft this year. Assuming he's as good as people project, that's
what a dream fit.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, that was wild to get him.
And Davenport to go across from Woolen, like you can play some good defense, and then
Witherspoon.
Oh, Davenport. Devin. That's why I said Davenport.
Oh, okay,
Devin.
I was wondering. How'd you get Davenport? Yeah.
Who the hell is Davenport?
I wanted to ask you about that. Because this was a shock. The Witherspoon at five. Everyone thought the Seahawks would go defensive line. I've talked about Witherspoon a lot. He's my favorite player to watch in the draft. You know, I love him. Is there something to the idea of like having different body types? Because he is a little bit undersized. Tariq Woolen is gigantic. He's a lot more skilled than Tariq Woolen. Different style of player. But like, how do you feel about like pairing two corners who are like different sizes like that?
It's too damn hard to find two good corners to be out here trying to get different sizes. So if you get lucky with different sizes, I guess you could argue that there are receivers that are really big. So obviously having Tariq Woolen for those receivers, he's going to struggle with smaller, shiftier guys. Like route running technicians would be. So yeah, theoretically, yeah, I'd love to have a different corner for every type of player. But the fact of the matter is, and you and I have talked about this before, is like, I think we are in the golden age of corners. Like, I think that there are better corners in this league now. The corners in the league now are better than they've ever been in the history of the game, in part because the rules have been like consistent long enough for them to like grow up in it and adjust and learn new techniques that we didn't even have when I was playing. But the fact of the matter is, it's still the hardest to do on the field. And so, yeah, sure. If you can get somebody who can play corner at 6'3", awesome. And someone who can do it at 5'8", fantastic. But the fact of the matter is, you just need a couple good guys.
Also, just kind of more broadly, I'd love to talk to you about this. So, like I said, the assumption was the Seahawks would add to the defensive line, whether it was...
You got somebody eventually, Derek, right? Hall from
Derek Auburn. Hall, who's, yeah, second rounder out of Auburn. People like him. Mm-hmm. Kind of a tweener, a little bit undersized, speed to power guy. But, you know, at this point, they don't have a lot up front, proven talent. You have Uchenna Nwosu, who's a great second pass rusher, I think. Mm-hmm. And they signed Draymond Jones on the inside, which should help a lot. He's a really solid player out of Denver. But, you know, this was the draft where they were thinking they would add Carter or Tyree Wilson, and instead they went corner. So you and I have talked a lot about the benefits of potentially building back to front, the Baltimore Ravens being Exhibit A for a team that's approached it this way. Right now, the Seahawks have a very exciting secondary. You know, we talked about Woolen, Kobe Bryant's an ascending nickel corner. You have Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams coming back from injury. They also signed Julian Love, which was a signing I quietly love. I really like this group. I also have concerns about their ability to get after the quarterback. What do you think about the fact that they, when given for the first time in so long, this premium draft pick that Pete Carroll and John Schneider took a corner instead of going D-line?
Yeah, we talk about areas where you can take pressure off of the rest of the team. You can put pressure on another portion of your roster, a position group. So in this case, it's the secondary. So like that's the argument I would make for not getting Jalen Carter right there and going for Devin Witherspoon is Jalen Carter. We bring him in. He's not going to turn our defensive line into the Legion of Boom defensive line. He's going to improve our defensive line. If we bring in Devin Witherspoon and he's as good as we think he is, and we have Tariq Woolen on the other side, we got Diggs back there. Like we got a real secondary. We can do things with that secondary that will make our D line's life easier and take pressure off of them. And so I think that's the argument I would make for it. I think in that situation, I'd be more likely personally to go with Jalen Carter, but like, I get the point, and that's why you like, sometimes it's the best thing to do. It's like the same argument for like the Bills getting a tight end. It's like, all right, you're really good at throwing the ball. Go get a pass catching tight end. Yeah. We're going to kill you with that. And having a hammer that you can bludgeon somebody with, to me, sometimes feels better than trying to like fill these holes. The only reason why I like bristle at it a little bit right here is because Jalen Carter is really close to a guaranteed thing, and he's so good. If I was looking at this and there was like a corner and a D lineman around the same level, it's like
Wilson,
man,
maybe.
Yeah, we Although could I would get.
Say, but Witherspoon was so clearly me the number one corner prospect.
Yeah,
but if it was corners, Tyler Wilson, he would not. Yeah. Be, you know,
I guess the thing about corner is it's always hard to predict too.
Yeah,
like and maybe they're better at it, but it's hard to predict. D tackle, I feel like, you know what? If you are mashing people in college, you're probably going to mash people in the league. So like I like the idea of getting the final infinity stone for your secondary because it makes your secondary snap worthy, but it's hard when Jalen Carter is still on the board.
Was that hard for you? Did that hurt to have to say that and say you wouldn't just take the top corner?
I did like it. It felt uncomfortable, but I can't lie to you.
All right. Well, you got to get going. You got basketball to watch. I am so grateful that you graced us with a return to talk about such an important event as the NFL draft. Check out the Dominique Foxworth Show wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to this, you can also watch our show on YouTube. Just Google it. You'll find it.
Yep.
All right.
Peace. Thanks, Nina. Bye.